delighted in the Maine outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Meet Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio. To the Maine outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you, and good evening, one and all, and welcome to the Maine Outdoors, Maine's longest-running outdoor talk radio program. We have an exciting, informative program lined up tonight, and as you know, every week, we're a talk radio program, and we invite your participation. We're interested in your thoughts and comments, and we'll be introducing our guests in just a moment, but first, the crew that make the show possible every week, the engineer behind the toggle switches and the gauges in there in Studio 7, Mr. Scotty Bates.
Yes, good evening, Paul, and good evening, everybody out there. And boy, it's been a beautiful one today.
Hasn't it? We've had a nice run of weather.
We have.
And we earned it, didn't we?
Those of us
who run away to Florida every winter, we earned it.
Yes.
Okay, and with him on his right is the sage of Grand Lake Stream, the chili maker, Mr. Norm Plord.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the show. Yes, I'd have to agree, this has been an amazing afternoon.
Oh, lovely, lovely. Nothing like a day in Maine when the sun is out. Beautiful.
And there's a wind, so it's keeping the flies busy trying to get to you, but they can't quite make it.
Yeah, that's the best part. Yeah,
that is the best part.
And our co-host is a registered Maine guide, master Maine guide. He's written a number of great books on fishing, and he's my friend Bob Lehman.
Thank you, my friend. And we'll be talking fishing a little later.
We will.
A lot of fishing.
I think we will.
Yep.
And nice to have you here, Mr. Lehman. And, of course, my great-grandson, Davin, still with us. He's the guy in charge of the numbers. What's the telephone number, Davin, if somebody wants to call our program?
1-800-966-1039.
All right. Is that a statewide toll-free number?
Yes.
It is. Okay. And, again, Davin encourages you to call our program tonight and take part in our program. I'll introduce our guests right now. They're from the VZ Salmon Club, and tonight we're going to talk about Atlantic salmon, talk a little bit about Penobscot River, the economics of the river, and the history of the river. And with us to do that is the president of the VZ Salmon Club, Andy Fitzpatrick.
Good evening.
Hi, Andy. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
And with him on his right is one of the movers and shakers, the member on the board there. You're still on the board, aren't you? Mr. Bob Wunjenik.
How you doing, everybody? Great to be here.
Nice to have you both here. And we're going to be talking salmon in just a moment. But first, Outdoor Digest time brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal and Maine Outdoor Publications. I want to say once again, you have time to pick up a June, or rather a July issue of the Sporting Journal, which features a real good in-depth story on how to go summer viewing of moose anywhere in the state of Maine. We have a collection of recommendations by the various wildlife biologists who tell folks like Bob Lehman exactly where he can drive to see a Maine moose.
There are plenty of moose around to see, no question about it.
Yes, sir, there are.
There sure are.
Yeah. So anyway, pick up a copy of the Sporting Journal at a newsstand near you. A couple of things. The DOE permit applications are now available from the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and you have until August 15th, I believe it is, and you must do it online by midnight. I guess they don't send out paper applications anymore, but I think you can obtain one if you're creative enough to figure out how to do it. That was a terrible thing. I shouldn't have said that. Speaking of putting myself on the spot, you know, I've been doing this show, Bob, for 22 years, and
yes.
I don't think, to the best of my recollection, I've ever taken advantage of the voice in the forum and the soapbox that I have here, really.
Really?
And
I know.
I mean, I've never gone into political issues because it's not appropriate.
That's not appropriate. Right? Absolutely not.
Yeah, but tonight I'm going to.
You are?
Yeah, I am going to. I have to. I have to do this because I just have to vent. I just have to do this. I would like to tell the Orland Town Office that they need to fix that road, that 1,000 feet of dirt road on the end of the Happy Town Road. It is a disaster.
It is.
I mean, I'm not kidding.
No,
right, Davin? You just rode that with me.
Yes.
It's a jaw-jarring. It's terrible. It's like somebody bombed it. And
washboardy.
Oh, washboardy?
Worse than washboardy.
No, these are potholes 3 feet deep. So anyway, Orland, fix the road, okay? Please fix the road, because if you don't, I'm gonna hostage the town manager and take him for a 60 mile an hour ride in my pickup truck across that road. It is unbelievable. Okay, enough said. All right, let's get back to more fun things right now. It's time for your favorite part of the program tonight, Bob's fishing report.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm the big boss, Bass.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yeah.
You know, Bob, when they first started that a couple years ago, you hated that song, but I'm beginning to tell it's growing on you.
Well,
you
Jimmy Layton started that, you know, I can't take credit for that.
Okay. What's going on in the fishing world?
Well, let's start off with you. I mean, you had quite a trip, too. You went to Scotty, your son, went up to Greenville.
Yeah, we
fished,
did.
Fished a pond or two up there?
Yeah, you know, I haven't had a chance to trout fish as much as I like, and so we took a... Dad, it was my birthday, and Scotty said, Dad, what'd you like to do on your birthday? And I said, you don't have a big party? No, I said, I'd like to go fishing. Mm. So we went, tented out on a pond, which will remain nameless.
Yeah.
And the first night, Bob, I'm telling you, it was fantastic. The pond was glassy, it was hot, sun was bright,
yeah.
And it was just, it defied all of the conventional wisdom about trout fishing,
yeah.
And we hit it big. On brookies.
Were they rising?
They're coming right up. No, they weren't rising. That was the thing.
Yeah.
I threw out an Adams, a 14 kidding. Adams, pow.
Wham.
Scotty flew out a caddis, pow.
No
Then
fooling.
He put on a lug wrench, and he threw that out,
and
pow.
They weren't rising. Maybe that's a good sign, you know.
I don't
know. Sometimes it's best just to use your best patents, because if they're rising, they're rising for something you haven't got.
Bob,
you know,
it didn't matter. Bob, it didn't matter. I'm telling you, it didn't matter what you threw out there. You could have thrown out a cigarette butt, and they would have hit it.
That's amazing. And well, nobody there. Yourself.
Not a person on this pond. And we tended out there, and the next night, Josh heard the fishing was so good, he came up, and I stayed back at camp because I was tired, and so the boys went out, and they got skunked. So that's fishing, you know.
Oh, yes, fishing.
But when they hit, it's nothing like it, right?
Oh, yes, nothing like it.
I caught a 15-incher on an Adams.
Oh, man.
And he grabbed it and jumped right out of the water. It was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. That's great, yeah.
Nothing like it.
Oh, boy. So you had a great trip.
We did, yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Oh, well, I went trout fishing a couple times, and I can't say that it was a wonderful trip either time. First time we went up to a place I go, and we didn't do anything. And then the next day, I went up to another fellow I know, and we went to a second place where you have been. You've been to both places, actually.
Yep.
And somebody was ahead of us. So it's a small place, you know, it's a short trip.
Oh, yeah.
So somebody's ahead of you. It's disappointing because we should have gone somewhere else. So we didn't do very well, as you know. So we got about two-thirds down the stream, and my pal got his fly caught up in a tree.
Yeah.
And he stood up in the canoe to try to get it off. And he lost his balance and fell down on the gunwale. And, of course, we went over. And it was over our heads there. And I always wear waders, hip waders.
Oh, no.
And I shouldn't wear hip waders in a canoe. It's very dangerous, and I learned a good lesson. Don't wear hip waders. I've always worn hip waders, get over dams and put your canoe in the muck and the mire and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But from now on, brother, I'm wearing sneakers. I don't care what time of year it is, because I went all the way under.
Well, the other
thing it was deep.
The other thing you got to remember, too, is next time you go fishing with him, you just got to bring your snorkel. Bring your snorkel with you.
That's a good thought.
Yeah.
That's a good thought. So I'll tell you, I made it to shore, but it was scary.
Wow.
Because it's just like two lead weights on your feet.
Oh, yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
And I've been over before in a canoe with my waders on, but never in deep water. And this was deep water.
Wow.
This was, it was a flowage. And it was probably where I was maybe 6 to 7 feet deep, and I'm only about 5'8", so I went under.
Wow.
And I crawled ashore and come up for air, and crawled further and get up for air, and I made it to a hummock. And God was there with me, I'm telling you right now. It was hairy. It was really hairy.
Nobody...
So I want to put the word out. Be safe. Don't wear waders when you're canoeing.
All right.
Right?
Wow. And tell your partner to stay sitting.
So we didn't catch any fish, and we had a hairy day, but... we learned something.
I'm glad you're here, man.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
Thank you, sir.
I didn't know that. This is the first I'd heard of this.
Well,
He saved it. I tried to get him to talk about it. He wouldn't talk about it.
You know, word travel so fast on when you dunk yourself, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody, not everybody in church, but most of the other guys is, I heard you took a dip, or whatever.
You can ask them how cold the water was.
Well, that's scary.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Hard to swim on those.
You don't swim.
No, you don't.
You don't swim with waders on. There's no question about it. I was going to say, if you had chest waders on, you want to be sure and wear a belt.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Because you can float with chest waders. Yeah. I mean, you won't go down. You will float, even in quick water. Is that right, Bob?
That's right.
You know that, and probably Andy does too. But with hip waders, you got lead weights, and you just can't lift them in the water. I mean, if you're down there and you just can't move them, you know, you're carrying all that water. Yeah. And so it gets hairy. So,
you know, at your age, you should know better, too.
Well, not necessarily. I've worn those things for years.
Yeah, that's what I said.
But I never had an experience like this.
No, okay. Well,
I've been very careful.
You never stop learning in life, do you?
No, you don't, I sure would like to get that safety feature out there.
Okay. Is that the fishing report?
That's the report, sir.
Okay, so anyway, we're all glad you're still with us, and be more careful, Bob.
Yes, I'll try.
All right. And that wraps up the Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. If you joined us a little late tonight, our guests are Andy Fitzpatrick, president of the VZ Salmon Club, and club member Bob Wunjinik, and they're going to talk about Atlantic salmon tonight. And then at 7:30, we're going to hook up with Andy Good, who's executive director of the Atlantic Salmon Federation. And Andy is going to have a few points of view, too, as well. And I think we all may get into I hope it's constructive conversation about Atlantic salmon and the Penobscot River. Now we're going to have an outdoor trivia question brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. And if you have the answer to Andy Fitzpatrick's question, he will award you this is a gold embossed VZ. Is this gold embossed?
This is.
It's a VZ Salmon Club. Oh, that's a nice looking
mug. Oh, it's a nice looking mug. Look at that.
It's collectible.
Look at that. I have one of those. Bob gave me one of those. I have one.
Oh, got it.
Well, I'll take yours back then.
This is a beautiful cream-colored mug with an inscription on the front of VZ Salmon Club with a big Atlantic salmon jumping out of the water where sportsmen meet. Beautiful cup. Anybody would be proud to hold that cup, and Andy will give it to you if you know the answer to his question. Now, I warn you, this is not an easy trivia question. Go ahead, Andy.
No, this is a big one. This is naming the four migratory species that use the Milford Fish Lift and are counted by DMR.
Okay,
that's a big and that can't include any of the names of the officers that actually go out and check those fish either.
It has to be a migratory fish.
That's right. It has to be a migratory fish.
Okay, and what's the number, Davin, if somebody wants to answer the question?
1-800-966-1039.
All right, you guys ponder that, and we'll be right back.
Et cetera.
Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors and our guest tonight, Andy Fitzpatrick from the VZ Salmon Club and also Bob Wunjinik. If you're ready to try out the trivia question to win a coffee mug,
yes.
We'll take our first call.
We have Steve from Old Town.
Okay, Steve from Old Town, you're on Maine Outdoors.
Okay, let's try, first of all, Atlantic salmon, alewife, shad, and stripers.
Is that the right answer?
I think we've got ourselves a winner out of the gate.
All right. That surprised me. I thought that might take a minute or two. Good. What's your name, sir?
My name's Steve Morin.
Yeah. Okay.
I live right here in Old Town.
Okay, Steve. Congratulations.
Steve, congratulations.
You've won the mug, and not everybody has one of these, so it's quite a nice thing to have, beautiful coffee mug. And we're going to have, I guess, you're going to take his address, Scotty or Norm is?
I think Norm is.
Norm is going to take your address, our assistant engineer.
Sounds great.
Okay, and anything else on your mind tonight, Steve?
No, I'm glad you guys are doing this show. The river means a lot to me, and I've seen it change over the years, and we just need to tweak a few things, and we'll get salmon back in the river so we can all fish them.
All right, I like your style. Stay on the line now, and we'll make sure we get your address.
Thank you.
Okay, those were the correct answers, and very well done by Steve. All right, let's get down to business here, and let's talk about Atlantic salmon. Andy, a lot happening in the river, as everybody knows who follows it closely, and I'm sure you do, being president of the club. What's going on with the river right now in Atlantic salmon?
Well, we're certainly watching the exciting news this past week when we heard of the fish counts were kind of totaled up, and we had over 1,000, I think, fish through the Milford Fish Ladder counted, which was very exciting news for us.
You bet.
And certainly we had a late spring with a lot of high water. And so we really look at the fish count is from the fish lift is excellent. We also watch a lot of water running around that fish ladder for a month and a half, and we're hoping that inside of that water that was flowing that we had just as strong accounts, you know, along that whole side of the that whole length of the dam, if you will.
Yeah. So the 1,000 is that's the best they've seen in what, Bob Wojcinek, 10 years.
Like since 2011, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. You took some pictures over there.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that? What did you see there?
We've been watching the river very carefully because ever since the Milford Fish Lift was put in, which is different technology than it's used anywhere else in Maine, we noticed, obviously so, that the Penobscot River in Milford flows over the dam and over a series set of ledges right up to the time that the Milford Dam closes their flashboards.
Right.
So right through March, April, May, and right through most of June, and even into early July, fish passage was possible for fish to go over the dam without using the fish lift. Now, there's no way to enumerate that, no way to count them, but we do watch them. And there's a lot of testimony to people who sit on the riverside and watch the fish try to jump the dam and go over that. I photograph the dam almost on a daily basis, and in one day alone, I saw 5 salmon within 12 minutes.
Okay.
Be lifted over, because Brookfield was doing their job, when the flashboards went up. 5 salmon and other species, too, were kind of stranded temporarily in the area in the middle of the dam. So they were netted by Brookfield and put over the top of the dam. Now, that was just in a 12-minute period.
So for those who may not be as well-schooled in dam technology as you are, when you say the flashboards, what do you mean by that?
These are the devices they use to control the water levels and divert water either to the turbines or someplace else. In the case of the Milford Dam, water is diverted to the turbines there, of course, but also to the Stillwater branch of the Penobscot, which sends water down to 2 electric dams on the Stillwater River, one in Orono and one in Stillwater.
So you're saying, again, to understand this, that the fish lift, as it's called, only works on certain occasions, dependent on the water levels?
The fish lift is put into operation when the levels, water levels allow it to be put into operation. And that was about the middle of May this year. And even though the fish lift was in operation, it's only used about during the daytime hours. It's not done whenever the fish are there, and sometimes not every day.
So somebody, I'm really not well informed on this, somebody has to operate that lift? It's not automatic.
It's not automatic. It has to be operated, and because it has to be operated for good reasons. The federal government takes salmon out of there to take them to the Craig Brook Hatchery.
Right.
For eggs and to get salmon for stocking, smolts, and make smolts and fry and eggs and so forth. So there has to be a reason for that. But the fish, especially a salmon, can't get into the fish lift anytime they want. It's not always open to them. But when the river flows are adequate, they don't even need to use a fish lift. And I'm going to suggest everybody listening go to VZ Salmon Club's Facebook page.
Right.
We have all the photographs documenting that what I've just said on the Facebook page, showing conditions that are suitable for going over the dam from March right through a week or so ago. It was possible. There are times when the flashboards prohibited that, but most of the time it was passable. So the water flow over the dam was providing plenty of attraction water to actually attract salmon and other species to the center of the dam. And it was better attraction water until recently than it was going to the fish lift. So we have no way to enumerate it, but we know it happens.
So what your premise is, I gather, is that there are more salmon going up the river to spawn than indicated by the official count. Is that what you're saying?
That would be easy to assume, but there's no way to enumerate it, but we know they are because they've been seen. We've been photographing them. Brookfield says they're counting the fish they dump over the top of the dam count tally. That's fine if they do, but they're not counting the ones that go over the dam when they can't see them. We have witnesses that see that all the time. Now, on our Facebook page, we get over 30,000 organic hits on our Facebook page on most of our posts, including the river post that shows what's going on, because people now are being made aware of it for what we're doing. So there is a good chance there's a lot more salmon than 1,000 have gone over the Milford Dam.
And you're not going to hazard a guess as to what that extra salmon tonnage might be. I mean,
boy, I wish I had that crystal ball.
Well, the biologists must know. I mean, a salmon doesn't care whether he gets up the river by going up over the dam or gets lifted up by some guy. He just wants to get up river.
Yeah, they don't read the books on they're supposed to use the fish lift. Right. They can get up river the easiest way, and many times, yeah, if you look at the photographs on Facebook, you will definitely see that the easiest way is going over the dam without using the fish lift.
Would a biologist contend with you over that or disagree?
I hope they wouldn't, because it's pretty much a lot of common sense and good judgment, yeah, at this point in time. They won't. I have nobody has admitted to us yet, except there is one little bit in a research paper done recently showing that they expect one salmon out of some of the ones that they tagged went over the center of the dam when the flows were adequate, and the rest of them went through the fish lift. But this is a small, very small study. Yeah. But even if one salmon out of what they tagged went over the center of the dam, you can bet your bottom dollar that the salmon run starts early.
Okay. All right, we're going to hear from Andy Good from the Atlantic Salmon Federation, who will have his point of view. So you stay with us right here on Maine Outdoors. Okay, we're back with Maine Outdoors. And again, this is a interactive radio program, which means we welcome your participation in our program, and we do entertain your point of view. So if you have a comment, pro or con, whatever your position may be, doesn't matter. We just like to hear from you. And if you'd like to call us, the number, Davin, is
1-800-966-1039.
All right. And we look for your calls, and you have a question for either Bob Wunjinik or Andy Fitzpatrick, we welcome your presentation. Okay, we were talking, we're going to hook up right now, I believe, with Andy Good. Are you there, Andy?
Yes, I am. Hi there.
Good evening to you, and welcome to Maine Outdoors.
Oh, thank you.
And you know Bob Wunjinik and Andy Fitzpatrick, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I know. You know, Bob and I go way back, and he was president of our Maine Council, back a few years ago.
Oh, great. And as I understand, you're the executive director of the Atlantic Salmon Federation, right?
Yes, for the U.S. programs, yep, here, and which are mostly focused in Maine. And then we have our Maine Council, Atlantic Salmon Federation, made up of different river groups around the state. Yep.
And before we get to discussing the issue at hand here, what is the role of the Atlantic Salmon Federation, Andy?
Our role is really to recover the species. And, the Maine Council takes the lead on a lot of at the river type of level on issues, things like that. And then the Atlantic Salmon Federation, the parent organization, we get involved in larger things, such as the larger dam removals that we've seen in Maine on the Penobscot. It's the buyout of the Greenland fishery. It's fighting, in some cases, the salmon farming industry. You know, larger sort of issues that aren't really at one particular watershed, but really span across the range of Atlantic salmon.
Yeah, did you get a chance to hear the earlier part of the program when I talked to Bob and Andy? Have you heard the show tonight?
I didn't know. I wasn't able. I'm down in Brunswick here.
Okay, one of the points that Bob and Andy made was that there seemed to be, from their perspective and what they've seen on the river, that there seemed to be a lot of salmon getting around the fish lift and getting up over the dam. Your folks agree with that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, certainly we've got a good run. This is the biggest run we've had in 8 years, and the Miramichi is sort of trending the same way up in Canada, so that's all good. They've got 1,054 come up through Milford so far. Certainly some have gone over that midsection. They always have. I don't think it's a big number from what I can tell, but certainly some have. I mean, the problem is, in the listing of Atlantic salmon, we advocated for a threatened species because a threatened species would have allowed for a recreational fishery. We lost that battle, but in the recovery plan, as a result of, I think, some of the input of the angling community, the numbers for downlisting from endangered to threatened are relatively low. And basically, in the state of Maine, it's 1,500 adult fish, but they need to be spread out. There's three regions of salmon restoration in Maine, down east, Penobscot, and basically the Kennebec and some of those rivers right around the Kennebec. And basically, we need 1,500 fish, but we need at least 500 in two of those three regions. So obviously, the Penobscot, just through the fish going through the Milford, never mind, you know, what may be going up over the middle there, we qualify for that. We need to, you know, we're making some progress. We need to make more progress in one of these other two regions.
What's the position of the Federation, Andy, on the delisting of the Atlantic salmon to threatened at this point?
Well, I mean, so that's, you know, we wanted threatened largely, as I just mentioned, because of the potential for recreational angling. And we have a recreational fishing policy, because we're an angling organization, that talks about the importance of keeping anglers on a river, even when populations are low, for all the right reasons. And so, you know, we state that all the time. But at the same time, you know, I'm afraid, that ship has sailed at the moment, and, you know, we're focused more on, you know, trying to get to this 500 fish level and you know, keep it up in the Penobscot, keep the recovery going, you know, at the same time, make improvements. I mean, we certainly are, you know, we work with the governments. We're not necessarily, you know, we get along with them on some issues and not on the others. And that Kennebec, we're really at odds with the state and the feds at the moment, and we need that river opened up because of the potential for Atlantic salmon. And by, you know, again, you know, getting that, you know, we can get down to a threatened status. I mean, the other problem, too, as you guys know, and Bob knows, too, our biggest problem is out in the ocean right now. You know, historically, it was dams and some of the industrial effects here in Maine on salmon populations. And, you know, we've done a pretty good job in fixing our rivers, and we're continuing to make some progress. But at-sea survival has just plummeted for Atlantic salmon and a lot of other fish in the North Atlantic, and that's affected rivers like the Miramichi and New Brunswick that we never thought in our lifetimes would take such a hit.
Andy, I had a question for you. Bob Lehman, do you know if the commercial netting in Greenland Straits has another moratorium going on that they had promised to start? Do you know anything about that? That might be the increase in the salmon in the main rivers?
Yeah, well, there is, it's a relatively small fishery anyway. That fishery that's off of West Greenland, it's a subsistence fishery and it's a commercial fishery. So the Atlantic Salmon Federation, the North Atlantic Salmon Fund, have bought out that commercial fishery. Year to year. We have a 12-year agreement. We pay them the commercial folks, not the fish. And so there still is a subsistence fishery that takes, you know, roughly 7,000 or 8,000. So we think that. You know, it's too hard to say whether this bump we see now is a result of that, but you really need to see this thing over a few years to say that that's
happening. Well, it made a big difference back in the 80s when they had a moratorium, and the last one they had made a tremendous difference. So if they have,
well, it's one of the few things we can control. So those, we have to try to control the things we can, and that's one we can try to control.
Andy, getting back at the Penobscot River, so did I understand you correctly? You're saying your federation did support the delisting or the listing of the Atlantic salmon as threatened rather than endangered, but...
Oh, yeah. No, we always have.
But it's not your purview to make that decision?
No. Well, no. We're an NGO. You know, you know, it's really, you've got two federal agencies, NOAA Fisheries and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and have joint jurisdiction, and... it was their decision, you know. So, you know, the only thing I can say is that the recovery plan, which was way overdue, for no excuse at all there on the part of the feds, finally came out this year, 2019, or maybe it was last fall, I'm forgetting now. But at any rate, the threshold is pretty low for delisting down to a threatened. So, I mean, that we were happy about. I mean, the draft recovery plan was much more strict. The final recovery plan, you know, they dropped the numbers and made it so we only need 500 fish in two of the three regions where there's, you know, salmon, Atlantic salmon in the state of Maine. So I think it's achievable. Is it achievable tomorrow? No. You know, it's going to be a while, unfortunately. But I just don't think there's any legal angles. I think you would have seen industry already take some of those routes if it was feasible to, in any regulatory or legal fashion, to try to force a downlisting at this time. But I just don't think those avenues are open at the moment.
I think the VZ Salmon Club and some others have argued that the distinct species argument was not valid because of all of the stocking of cultured fish, or whatever you want to call it. Does the Federation not agree with that?
Yeah, I don't. You know that one. You know, you can make a credible argument on, I think, on either side of that. Remember, going way back, Angus King, that was his argument also. I guess what we, you know, I don't necessarily think we have the on-staff expertise to really say. I mean, that's where Senator Collins and Senator Snow did the, brought in the National Academy of Sciences and did that review back in the early 2000s. And basically that review, and there's probably a better name than I'm using, but essentially said that they were a distinct species and they were genetically different than what we see up in Canada, and they were genetically different among the rivers here in Maine. And the congressional delegation at that time said, oh, you know, okay, so all right, let's move on. Let's move on towards recovery and let's work together. And there's been a lot of that since then. I think that's the position we've taken. But it is an argument that can be made credibly on both sides, I would say.
Hey, what if, let's look ahead a year or two. Let's just take the best case scenario and say, oh, let's say 3 years from now, 5 years from now, there's 5,000 salmon coming through that lift. I think you're going to see tremendous pressure from the sportsmen
agree, and we should, you know? I agree. No question. And,
And you're a fisherman, so you would agree with that, right?
Yeah. You get to some point like that. I mean, it's worth. You have to revisit those numbers and say, there's no question. Or and maybe in the shorter term too, we can look like they did that broodstock fishery in New Hampshire. And there's some talk going on behind the scenes about taking a river that's not part of the listing here in Maine and growing out some Atlantic salmon and having an experimental catch and release fishery in one of those rivers. And so I think there is a little bit of short-term potential there. Or taking one of the listed rivers, but a section that's not, part of the recovery and putting some salmon in there and trying a fishery. Because there's a lot of benefits for having...
And let me ask Andy, while you're still there, ask Andy the question. As president of the club, of the VZ Salmon Club, is your group doing anything? This is not accusatory, I'm just asking. Yeah. Is your club doing anything to try to convince the powers that be that maybe they need to rethink this listing situation?
Well, I think that's exactly where we're at today, is aligning to understand where and we need to apply the pressure and how we need to apply the pressure. And so far, we didn't. I think when the listing came about, I think there was a little bit of fault, a little bit of misunderstanding, and the understanding was that there was a general sense in the community. I think that fishing was closed in the Penobscot completely when the listing came about.
Yeah.
And then we slowly brought back the understanding that you can fish the Penobscot River.
Yeah.
And if you do catch a salmon, but you have to release it obviously and not take it from the water and so forth. But people are going to fish. People are going to hook fish.
Yeah.
So let's put a fishing plan in place that allows single hook, no barb, and be able to do a catch and release program like every other river does along the East Coast, except for our little place here along the coast of Maine.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that.
And you can fish the Miramichi. You can fish in southern New England areas. Yeah. There are some put and take rivers, as Andy talked about, that have tried some items. But really, for us, it's pretty darn hard to sit at the VZ Salmon Club on the deck, look at some of the most prime waters that you can see out there to fish. You wouldn't know if you were sitting on, Miramichi or the Penobscot, really. Yeah. And really, all we're advocating is that we put in a responsible fishing program, a very limited fishing program that allows us to enjoy the fishery, take care of our fish, and I think we might actually learn something from it. Everybody might learn something from a well-executed catch and release program.
Yeah, I think I think recreational anglers want those salmon to survive and flourish as much as anybody. Your thought on that, Andy?
Well, it is. I mean, the recreational angler. The reason there's any fish in the any salmon in the Penobscot is back in the 80s and 90s, it was the sportsmen. that fought the rebuilding of the Bangor Dam and defeated the Basin Mills Dam, you know, along with the Penobscot Indian Nation. You know, then that created the opportunity for the recent Penobscot River Restoration Project that, you know, purchased 3 hydro dams, removed 2, and built a new river channel around Howland.
Right.
You know, now we're in the third phase, which is we're trying to open up all the tributaries. We have more dam removals and building fishways and changing road crossings. So, you know, I think the immediate future for the Penobscot is, you know, these other fisheries. It's building a shad population, which we now have in a great recreational fishery in the Kennebec as a result of the Edwards Dam removal. It's you know, the native fisheries there, smallmouth bass. But I just unfortunately think we're banging our head against the wall a little bit, you know, right now, trying to make any headway going from endangered to threatened. The arguments that I just heard are totally valid and reasonable. I'm not arguing with those at all, but I just, you know, given the laws that are in place and the decisions that have been made, I just don't think we've got that opportunity at the moment.
I would say fair. I also would say that laws were made to be changed and modified also, and not only from a recreational fishing standpoint, but that was a big blow to our region. In 1988, there was over $1.3 million spent in recreational fishing revenue. Is associated with all that activity. That was just 1988. You look at all the rest of those years combined. It combined to be quite a socioeconomic impact. You know, socioeconomic impact.
Good point.
To not just the Penobscot.
Yep.
And you look at now just barely. As we look at our good friends over in Eddington, trying to keep their salmon club alive, Eddington salmon, you know, VZ salmon club's trying to stay alive, and we certainly recognize the shad population. And listen, we want to fish. We love to fish, but we don't want to hide any things up our sleeves. Our true passion is the Atlantic salmon.
All right. Thank you.
And you're not paying for the program.
You bet.
The anglers are.
Andy, we're going to let you go here because we're running up against the clock. We have to take a commercial break and so forth. But, again, we appreciate you being with us.
Hey, great. Thank you for talking about Atlantic salmon and keeping in the public spot.
Okay. Come back again soon. All right. Thank you. We're going to take a short commercial break here, and then we'll take that call. Okay, Scotty? All right, well, we want to remind you again, the show is sponsored in part every week by General Appliance in Brewer.
Yes, and they sponsor our main outdoors program, as Paul just mentioned, and they're our friends at General Appliance in Brewer, and that's formerly Perkins Appliance, right there on Center Street in Brewer, and they're easy to get to. Just come across the new bridge, take a right on your right and a left, and you're on Center Street, and they got practically the whole block there, and they also sell gas, electric appliances, and they're all-around appliance dealer, offering services of anything you purchase there, which is no small deal today. And a relatively new item that they have at General Appliances, easy to operate and comfortable composting toilets. Where are you on that out there in the control room?
Right away, baby.
That's right. Okay. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. Now, you had something to say about
General Appliances. Al called me. Al can call me the other day. He wanted to tell you that for the first time in 40 years, he's going to take a day off. So his shop will be closed on July. Get this right, Al. July 18th and 19th. When is that, Bob? That's the end of the week?
Yeah, I'd say.
Anyway, July 18th and 19th of this week, Al's shop will be closed. He's going to take a well-deserved vacation, but he'll be open again on Monday. And we appreciate his sponsorship, as you should, by patronizing his shop.
And they're the only one that he has is us, and the only one he needs, he says. So that ought to tell you something.
Yes, sir.
And another thing, they sell our books over there, Paul.
Sure they
do.
Good books, too. Great books.
Great books. You bet they are. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. I was just handed something that I didn't have the privilege to have before. And I hope Andy's ears aren't red, but I just wanted to. I believe in getting down to the facts for the nitty gritty. Bob and Jennings just handed me an official document here, which says that, and I'm going to quote this. You remember Andy said that the Federation supported a threatened listing for the salmon, and I'm quoting now, apparently that's not so. This says, Trout Unlimited, that would be Maine TU, right, Bob? Trout Unlimited and the Atlantic Salmon Federation, which is the group that Andy represents, filed a lawsuit for an emergency endangered listing for Atlantic salmon. So that doesn't square with what Andy told us, and I don't know. I probably should have asked Andy directly if I'd had access to that info. I wouldn't have hesitated to ask him his position there. Anyway, what else on your mind tonight, gents, we can talk about?
Well, I want to make sure that people do.
Oh, excuse me. We have a phone call. Excuse me, Bob. I forgot. Let's take a call. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Andy Fitzpatrick and Bob Wingenick. Go ahead, caller.
I'm Steve Morin. I live in Old Town. And just a quick question for the group, and particularly Bob. I fish in Canada in Nova Scotia, and they have some small hatcheries far up the river systems, like, for instance, the Marguerite. Also, we have the Down East Salmon Federation that has a par program over on their river, and they're getting returns of adult salmon. The percentage of returns of adult salmon are far better than the smolt program that the state, that the federal program is doing, and they have been doing for the last 40 years. And I really think it has a lot to do with imprinting. And I think we ought to be spending some money putting some par hatcheries up rivers, further up the rivers, because these smolt that the feds are putting in are not having a chance to imprint. They're raised in Craig Brook, which is like as close to the ocean that you can get, and they don't spend zero time in the river to have any imprinting. Par will spend good part of their juvenile life in the rivers. But Bob, could you add something to that?
Well, Steve, there's a lot of variables there, and I think your comments you made are very well founded. This program of stocking and management of the Atlantic salmon in the Penobscot River has been going on for a long time. And unfortunately, when you have a program that doesn't appear to be working, why do the same thing over and over again? Now, they are experimenting, to be fair to them, with doing different things like putting eggs in the upper regions of the river, making artificial reds, and that kind of thing. So they are trying, but there needs to be more along the lines you said. There's a lot of research out there that says imprinting, not just imprinting, but genetic inbreeding, if you will, can cause problems with salmon. So when you take salmon out of the river at, say, Milford, and take male and females down to Craig Brook, and you spawn them together, then you catch their offspring again a few years later and spawn them together, that can be an issue. Now, there's a lot of research being done. I can't say that I've read it all or agree with all of it, but you're right. It's better to have the wild Atlantic salmon go upriver and spawn like they normally would. And if you're going to stock, I believe in putting them upriver as well.
Okay, Steve?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Let's take another call. Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a question. I was wondering if anyone has considered, instead of just taking these dams out, putting sushi pumps in, fish lifts or fishways, putting a lock in at the dams so that all you got to do is just have enough power to open and close the gates, and you'd have a relatively free flow of salmon up down river.
That's an interesting concept. I wouldn't say that'd be a very it would probably limit the ability of the companies who own the dams, who are licensed by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to operate the dams to their potential for producing power. And unfortunately, I can honestly say I and a lot of other people, especially a lot of biologists, would agree that the management that is okayed by FERC is not ideal necessarily for the Atlantic salmon. Give you an example. We can't catch and release Atlantic salmon as responsible anglers on the Penobscot River because a study over in Europe showed that there might be a 2% mortality for catch and release. But those studies were done with barbed hooks, okay, and a lot of other things that we won't have to go into. However, Brookfield Power is allowed to kill up to 5% of the run of Atlantic salmon through each dam they have on the Penobscot River.
Is that like an annual figure?
It could be annual. I don't want to speak to that because I haven't read the details. But 5% is a lot compared to 2%. That's at every dam. So there's a possibility, according to one salmon biologist who's now retired from the state of Maine, told me that's up to 20% of the run on the Penobscot River.
Wow. You know, I like the point that Andy made to Mr. Good, and I think it's a good one. I mean, laws can be changed. That's part of American way, right? And, let's face it, Collins and other folks like that have power in Washington, and can apply pressure on issues like that. So,
but I think it's a, and I think it not only speaks to the listen to the concern that we manage our fishery and take care of our fish. Listen, we're not arguing that at all at the VZ Salmon Club. We just want a level playing field, and we feel that there's a justification to go back and look at our ability to cast a barbless hook 60 days out of every year,
right.
You know, in 55 to 65 degree water, you know, and be able to enjoy what everybody else does in other rivers, but we don't, because we all have sat back and said we can't because we're hitting our head, we're up against a brick wall. We've yet to figure out really where all those bricks really are, and how do we are we really that stock?
You bet. You still there, caller?
No.
We lost him, Scotty, right?
We lost him. Yeah.
Okay, good question. Good input, caller. We appreciate your call. Yeah, so anyway, I guess it's a question of whether it's ever going to happen, but we certainly hope you, VZ Club, continues to apply the pressure in the right places. Bob?
Yeah, one last comment. I would like to encourage everybody, in order to keep up to date on what we're talking about and what we're trying to do and accomplish in educating the public, is to join our Facebook page, VZ Salmon Club. If you don't use Facebook, find someone who does, and you'll have a chance to see all the things we're talking about. You'll mm-hmm. see the photographs of the Atlantic salmon being put over the center of the dam on the Penobscot River by Brookfield Power.
Yep.
And these are salmon that were stranded temporarily. They were there to take them out, thank God. So they didn't die, but that was only in a short period of time. But please, we reach over 30,000 people on our post. Most of those 30,000 people are within Maine, not all of them. And we're getting thousands and thousands of people on our Facebook page who acknowledge this program tonight. About 7,000 people acknowledge that we're going to be in this program tonight. That's how much interest there is in restoring Atlantic salmon catch and release in the Penobscot River.
Okay. Pardon me. I'm a Facebook dummy. And, Bob, you may know how to do this, but is there a Facebook address you have to have to find this?
Just have to search VZ Salmon Club, and our page will come right up.
On Facebook. On yep. Facebook. Okay. Yep. You understand that, right?
No.
No, I don't either.
I don't want to.
Davin, do you know how to do Facebook? You know Facebook.
Yes, probably.
I don't even have a phone.
Oh, you don't even have a phone? Oh, that's good. That's a that's blessing. Cool. What's the number, Davin? Somebody wants to call.
1-800-966-1039.
Okay, and how much time do we left have, Scotty, here tonight? About a minute and a half. If somebody is interested in joining the VZ Salmon Club, now, I understand... I'm a member of your club, although I haven't been to an event yet, and I apologize. I've just been so busy this summer, but I plan to get up there. I'm hearing good things about your resurrection of your club. The good things are happening, right?
That's great things. It is great things. Less than 15 months ago, we were down to depleted to a 13-member club. We're up to we're well over 100 now.
You're on the rocks, and now you've come back.
We're feeling really good about it. Yeah. But remember, we were 350 members strong with a 150-person waiting list. In the heyday. That's where we want to get back to.
Well, good luck to you folks. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And good luck with your program.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. And next week, our guest is going to be legendary Allagash guide Gil Gilpatrick. And we'll see you all next week right here on
Maine Outdoors.